God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. This is the final program in a four-day series with Dr. Grant Jeffrey. He and Brother Hutchings have been talking about information found in Brother Grant's newest book entitled Shadow Government. He's an expert in Bible prophecy, and that comes through in the intriguing volume he's written. Brother Hutchings, would you tell us more about the book?
Thank you, Brother Jerry. It's a fascinating book. He covers the entire scope of where we are, how we got here, and where we're likely to be tomorrow. And it's one of the most comprehensive prophetic overviews that I've seen recently. I've enjoyed it very much. Grant is an astute prophetic scholar of world events and has been for years and years. He's on TV constantly. I consider him one of the leading prophetic scholars of our time. Grant, it's sure good to have you on the program today. I know that our listeners are getting a lot out of these programs, and we appreciate your taking the time. You know, Grant, our hand of biblical prophecy, of course, is Israel. Jesus said that Israel would be scattered into all the world until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And all these things we've been talking about this week, they would not have occurred had Israel not been a nation again. We would have been out of sync or, you know, talking before the time for them. But now that Israel is back and we see Israel with nuclear weapons, and now we see also Iran, who has threatened to literally wipe Israel off the map with atomic weapons. They now evidently are very near having atomic weapons if they don't already. That really brings us right up to almost the door, doesn't it?
It does indeed, because the Bible so clearly says that Israel, when they came back in the land, Noah, in both the book of Amos as well as Hosea, say that the world will not see the end of Israel. But when Israel came back in the land, they would never, ever again be exiled. Therefore, we know that Iran will not succeed. In a practical sense, Israel, together with America, has an anti-missile capability that is capable of taking down most missiles, not from a massive attack by a country like Russia, for example, but from a small nation with a very new nuclear program like Iran. Certainly, the number of missiles with nuclear weapons that Iran might fire at Israel would probably be less than 3, and Israel has an extremely good chance to knock them down with their anti-missile capability. Their Arrow anti-missile system has been designed in coordination with America. The Green Pine Tree radar system that can look over the horizon and can, from 600 miles away, detect a missile launch in Iran. By the time it reaches about 100 yards in the air, it can be detected. And Israel has the capability, and so does America, to knock down a small missile attack such as Iran is capable of launching. But it is certainly true that not only Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, but his whole government is absolutely committed to the destruction of Israel and also of America. And so we are in dangerous times. They even have a very destructive attitude, which makes the traditional deterrence that we have enjoyed with Russia for over 60 years, a deterrence which was called mutual assured destruction. Russia, you know, while was a very aggressive power, did not want to lose its entire population. And they knew that if they ever attacked Europe or America, then America was capable, and Britain and France as well, of wiping out the entire Russian population in retaliation. That caused them never to attack, not conventionally and not nuclearly. Unfortunately, Iran's leaders have said repeatedly, and I happen to believe them, that they don't care if the Iranian population is wiped out. Ahmadinejad was reported to have stated to a reporter who said, why in the world would you threaten Israel with a nuclear bomb when you know Israel has 200 to 300 missiles that can reach Iran and wipe out the entire nation? And he was reported to have said that he didn't care because the Jews would then go to hell and the Iranian Muslim population would go to paradise as shaheeds, martyrs to Islam. Well, how do you deter someone who actually welcomes death? And in his perverse theology, Ahmadinejad believes that his destiny, and he's stated this, that he believes it's his destiny to usher in a cataclysmic Third World War that will ultimately bring about the rise of the Mahdi, or the Islamic Messiah. And so you cannot deter someone who loves death, doesn't care about his own population or his own life. And therefore, Israel, as I have found in my own conversation, an interview with Benjamin Netanyahu about a year and a half ago in Israel, that he has stated that, tragically, and this was before he was prime minister, he said, Grant, when I become prime minister, I will be faced with the most terrible decision that any leader has ever faced, and that is that we will have to take out the Iranian nuclear capability before they take us out.
Yes, I know that it has been said that the United States forces in Iraq would not allow Israeli planes to fly over. Of course, that was a month or so ago. That may have changed. Saudi Arabia has indicated they might let them fly over, as I understand, even though that Saudi Arabia is a Muslim nation. I think they must fear Iran more than they do Israel.
Well, you're absolutely correct about that, because America, Obama's administration, has told Israel that they will not allow Israel to fly over. The original plan for Israel was to fly up the Mediterranean and then where the Syrian borders Turkey, to fly along the border until they reached Iraq, and then that the Americans would give them a flyway to cross freely over Iraq, where only American planes fly, and that they could then go right over Iraq into Iran and hit the nuclear sites. Well, Obama's administration, unlike the Bush administration, told Israel, no way, we're not going to give you that right. You will not fly over Iraq unopposed. And the security advisor, Zvig Brzezinski, who was the creator of the Trilateral Commission with Jimmy Carter, and is the present advisor to Obama on foreign affairs, he has publicly stated that American planes would basically stop Israel from overflying Iraq if they dared to do such. Well, when the Prime Minister of Israel realized that President Obama was going to oppose Israel taking independent action, he flew to Saudi Arabia for a secret meeting last spring with King Abdullah II. He left that meeting and flew to Egypt, where he met secretly with President Mubarak of Egypt. And as a result of those meetings, those countries, together with other Arab countries that are very, very afraid of Iran and its nukes, agreed with Israel that they get a green light to attack Iran and their nuclear program if they decided. Saudi Arabia gave them a flyway that Israel could literally fly right over Saudi Arabia and then over the Persian Gulf and into Iran and then back with its own refueling capacity and its electronic counter-warfare measures that Israel has. And therefore, there would be no difficulty whatsoever in Israel doing this, and it would not have to fly over Iraq. Well, America and Obama's administration was shocked when they found that the Arabs were far more afraid of Iran's nuclear program than they were concerned with the Palestinian situation. In fact, I know from my own sources, that most of the Arab nations really don't care a lot about the Palestinian situation. Now, they've told their people in propaganda that they care about it to fight against Israel, but in reality, in the Middle East, don't listen to what people say. Watch what they do. For example, Noah, Egypt has allowed 6 Israeli submarines, their Dolphin-class submarines that they bought from Germany, which have nuclear cruise missiles. Egypt allowed six of these submarines of Israel to go through the Suez Canal, surrounded by Egyptian warships, and right through and into the Red Sea and around to the Persian Gulf opposite Iran. Why did they do that? Because they want Israel to take them out. They are extremely afraid that Iran is going to use its nuclear weapons, not just against Israel, but against them.
This is Southwest Radio Ministries, your Watchman on the Wall program with Noah Hutchings and Dr. Grant Jeffrey. They aren't finished, and we'll be back shortly. In the meantime, we want to let you know how to get a copy of the book that's the basis for these programs, Shadow Government. It's offered for a gift of $20 in the U.S., $22 for Canadian listeners. To get it, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The web address is swrc.com. And now let's get back to Noah Hutchings' visit with Dr. Grant Jeffrey.
Grant, going from the Middle East, let's take a look at the European Union once more. At the time we're doing these programs, Tony Blair is seeking to be the president of the European Union. If that happens, looking down the road a little bit, what do you think is going to occur?
Well, one of the things that has been a frustration to Europe is, though there are 500 million people and they have an economic power at least equal to America and 500 million people, that because of the European Union situation with 27 different nations and a rotating presidency that lasts only 6 months, that you have people such as the head of Slovenia, Bosnia, you know, becoming president of the European Union for 6 months, no one knows their name, no one knows who they are, no one cares. And certainly such a person with a six-month term rotating among the 27 nations, some of them very small, has no hope of standing up to president of the United States or the president of Russia. And so in this situation, Europe has decided that they need a new constitution called the Lisbon Treaty. And 26 of the 27 nations in Europe voted for this. Most of them did so by the government just simply asserting this, no referendum, no election. But Ireland required a referendum. And a year ago, in 2008, the Irish voters said no. 53% of them said, no way, we don't want it. And this derailed the whole project, which just frustrated the European bureaucrats to no end. The plan is tomorrow, the voters of Ireland, having been heavily propagandized, are being asked to vote once again to see if 51% will say yes to the Lisbon Treaty, if that happens. Under the new agreement, instead of a rotating six-month presidency among all these 27 nations in the European Union, many of which are very small, they're going to have one permanent president. He will have a seven-year term. And Tony Blair, the former prime minister and world-acknowledged leader, very well respected throughout the world, is at the top of the short list of who would become president. So if Ireland votes yes to the Lisbon Treaty, the European Union will go one huge step further toward global government, and that an individual such as Tony Blair would become president for the next 7 years so that he could, as a credible, well-known world leader, stand up to Putin, stand up to Obama, and that is the plan. And Europe will then speak with a united voice and with a united military, and it will have the capability, because both Britain and France are nuclear powers. Together, they have an ability with a conventional army of Europe, of all the nations, that is quite strong, to really become what it has never been before, a united world power equal to the superpowers of America, Russia, and China. I believe that we need to keep our eyes on this, because the European Union will make one gigantic step towards what the Bible describes in both Daniel and Revelation as the revived Roman Empire. One of the things, Noah, it's interesting, a lot of people are unaware of, is that the Roman Empire was not just Western Europe. It was an empire that included Western Europe, but all of the nations of North Africa, of Morocco, and what we would call today Algeria and Libya, Egypt, Israel, Syria, and Turkey, and even the nations in the Ukraine were part of the ancient Roman Empire. What a lot of people don't know, Noah, is that those nations of North Africa, including Israel, are already associate members of the European Union. Not full-time members of the 27, but they are associate members, and it would not take much for them to become full-time members, in which you would have the revived Roman Empire absolutely complete geographically.
Yes, that's tremendously fascinating. Now, what about the 7 years you mentioned?
7 years will be the term of the proposed president of the European Union.
Well, that's interesting, in as much as, you know, the tribulation period will be 7 years.
Indeed. I don't think it's exactly, you know, synonymous, but it is intriguing that they would choose such a period, and that Europe, you know, when you look back at Israel, after 1948, when Israel was created, naturally, they didn't trust Europeans as far as they could throw them after they had totally ignored the security of the Jews in the whole period before the Holocaust and during it. And so naturally, Israel only depended on America as a truly responsible ally. But in the last couple of years, Israel has changed their attitude, and especially with Obama and his very curious attitude toward the Middle East and Israel, and his demand that Israel not even build settlements, not even, you know, within the geographic limits of settlements, to allow you to build a roof on your garage for your daughter to have her children live there. That's what Obama's administration is demanding Israel not do, which is just insane. It's never been demanded before. But in this situation, Israel is reaching out to Europe. And at the end of the Lebanon War, 2 years ago, Israel agreed that the European Union troops would be charged with the security of the security zone in the 20-mile area north of the Israeli border in Lebanon. Well, that is a real sea change in attitude. And I find it very significant because it's the first time since World War II that Israel has trusted Europe to do anything. And so, in light of the fact the Bible says that the European Union, the revived Roman Empire, will make a 7-year treaty with Israel, I find it fascinating that Israel is really looking much more favorably at Europe than solely to America to be of assistance in its security interests.
Brother Grant, the last chapter in your book is preparing for the last days. Do you have any advice for our listenership? Should they go sell all their bonds and sell their house and move over to Pea Ridge, Arkansas, or stock up big food supplies? What do you suggest?
Nothing of the kind. Certainly, you know, the Red Cross and other organizations like the Federal Emergency Management Agency suggest that all Americans, all Canadians, should have 2 weeks' supply of dried food and water for any emergency, whether it's a natural disaster or anything else. That is just being prudent, and I myself have such, because, you know, it's not for the end of the world, but, you know, we live in a world in which natural disasters occur and perhaps something that's not so natural. But the truth of the matter is, if you have 2 weeks' supply of food and water, then you yourself are not going to be of concern to the government. They can, you know, deal with those who have not provided. You can also help your family and your friends and your neighbors. So that's just being prudent for all things, but not an end-of-the-world scenario. Rather, what I believe is that we see these things happening. It should motivate us, Noah, to walk in holiness as never before, as 1 John 2 says, that when you see these things begin to happen, God said that we should live in purity as Jesus is pure. And we are living in the midst of an immoral generation. And I believe that we need to put on the whole armor of God daily, especially in our family, with prayer, with Bible study. But also we need to witness with urgency, as John 9 says, and Jesus said, when the night comes, no man can work. And he said that while the day is here, we are to pray that the Lord of the harvest sends laborers, including ourselves, to witness to others And in light of the times we live in and the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, as I point out in Shadow Government, the last chapter has the plan of salvation, as do all my books. I believe it's time for us to be serious about urgently witnessing to our family and friends. And Shadow Government is a book that not only will inform our listeners about the truth of the events happening, but it's a book that you can give your family and friends that will also introduce them to the reality of salvation in Jesus Christ. We are not to be filled with worry of doom and gloom, but to look up because Jesus Christ is coming.
I know there's a big movement for one world government now. Here in Oklahoma, we passed a sovereignty law, but I don't know how that sovereignty law is going to hold up if the whole nation loses its sovereignty. As the David Rockefeller indicated, that is on the plan to become part of a world government. How near do you think that is?
Well, I think that world government is very, very close. First of all, the European Union, if Tony Blair becomes the permanent president, if that happens, then, you know, put on your Shabbat clothes because the Messiah is coming fairly soon. I'm not a date setter at all. And I believe we have to live and witness to others as if Jesus Christ is coming tomorrow. But we have to plan and work as if we're going to have the rest of our lifetime. And so that's the dynamic spiritual tension that we live in. And so I believe all the fulfillment of prophecies that we've talked about so often and I write about in my books show how close we are in our generation to the coming of Christ. But without setting dates, we have to realize that the reason God told us this, all these details of prophecy, is because he wanted to motivate us to live in holiness, wanted to motivate us to witness. And around the world, the gospel of Jesus Christ is proceeding at a level that's never in history, Noah. We now are growing at a rate of 125,000 people every 24 hours accept Jesus Christ around the world. 16,000 Muslims accept Jesus Christ every day around the world. And we are seeing the growth of the gospel beyond anything. Even in the early church, we never saw the growth the way it is today. And so the gospel's going forth, and this is the most exciting time in history to be a Christian and to be in Christian ministry, as you and I have been privileged to be. And so it's not doom and gloom. It is a call to witness and to walk in holiness because Jesus Christ is coming soon.
Thank you, Grant, for being with us. And I know you're going to love Grant's book. I think you will certainly keep it for references. It's easy to read. That's one reason I like Grant's book. He leaves nothing hidden. He doesn't try to snow you or convince you how many doctor's degrees he has. He just presents the truth. So it's easy to read, easy to understand, a fabulous book. I would certainly encourage you to get a copy. Here now is Brother Jared to tell you how you can do that.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. There are three ways, phone, mail, or the Internet. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. Or visit the website at swrc.com. One copy of Shadow Government will be sent in appreciation of your $20 gift to this ministry if you live in the U.S. It's $22 for our Canadian listeners. The four programs in this series are also available. Get them on CD or tape for an offering of $19 in the U.S., $20 in Canada. This program is on your station only by your tax-deductible contributions. Next over many of these stations is a question and answer. Join us tomorrow on your Watchman on the Wall program, a production of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries Question and Answer. This is part two in a series of Q&As on the topic, Do Some Christians Hate Us? Evidently, some Christians do hate us. There are those who claim that conservative Christians have hijacked biblical Christianity. We were discussing Randall Balmer's book, The Kingdom Come, and Evangelical's Lament. Dr. Spargimino, does Balmer really claim that conservative Christians are not very Christian?
Well, Jerry, in the introductory section of the book, Ballmer says, quote, "I don't find much that I recognize as Christian in the actions and policies of the religious right," close quotes. Granted, he doesn't use the term conservative Christians. Rather, he faults the religious right. As we read his book, however, we see that the words religious right really includes many conservative Bible-believing Christians. And of course, I don't want to claim or even insinuate that everything that is done by the religious right is biblically correct and praiseworthy. However, Ballmer's book is one big diatribe against conservative views. Conservatives are trying to save the lives of the unborn, but Ballmer doesn't see much that is Christian in that. Conservatives are trying to preserve traditional marriage, but Ballmer doesn't see much that is Christian in that either. Conservatives are unhappy with public school sex ed programs that flaunt basic Christian morality, but Ballmer doesn't see much that is Christian in that. As far as I can tell, Jerry, the only thing that Ballmer sees as Christian is when Christian people keep their views to themselves and let the world rush on into moral confusion and doom.
Does he single out any Christian group or denomination in particular?
Well, he focuses on Baptists and claims that many of the leaders in the Christian right are Baptists. He finds it ironic, however, because Baptists have historically been champions of religious liberty, yet according to Ballmer, many fundamental Baptists deny the very tenets of religious liberty. Ballmer cites Rick Scarborough as one of the many Baptists who has ignored Baptist history. Scarborough became a political activist after sitting in on an AIDS prevention assembly in his daughter's high school in which the speaker twirled a condom around her fingers. Scarborough was incensed over the incident, and so as a result of this episode, he founded Vision America. Scarborough has prayed in public and said, "Lord, we pray that you would remove the judges who seek to destroy us."
Well, Brother Larry, what's wrong with that prayer?
Well, Jerry, nothing whatsoever. I would have no problem praying that prayer.
Don't all Christians, and not just Baptists, believe that the government should not be dictating moral beliefs to anyone?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, this is precisely what the government is seeking to do, enforcing politically correct speech codes and criminalizing religious beliefs because they are thought to constitute hate speech. That's the worst kind of government intervention possible. Ballmer and others like him show the bent of their religious convictions when they side with evil against righteousness.
What does Ballmer have to say about the First Amendment?
Well, Jerry, he calls it a grand and noble experiment. Quite inconsistently, he quotes Baptist leader John Leland, who in 1790 said this, "Government should protect every man in thinking and speaking freely and see that one does not abuse another." Now, how does one do that unless one engages in the culture war?
That's today's question and answer. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 800-652-1144. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News or question and answer.